So this year, we are going to learn, or at least we'll try to learn, things in halacha. Pretty much like what we did last year. If there are any specific topics that you want me to cover, then you can make requests. I make no promises. But the only thing I'll do is I'll consider it. When I was growing up, I mean, certain things strike you as being a little strange for whatever reason, but there was one thing that always struck me as being strange, and that was when you open up your sitter, and I don't know which sitter this was, but I think it was most of them, or most of the ones that we had, at least growing up in America, and it said that you pray in a certain way until you get to December 5th, and December 5th, then you change something. It always perturbed me. Why in the world would December be in the sitter? I mean, we don't even like December. It's not Jewish. Why in the world should December be in the sitter? So, that's what we'll learn about today, but that's just the starting point. Let's take a look at the first source. It's a Mishnah and a Gemara, which follows it up. In Masechet Ta'anit. Ta'anit deals with, at least the first whole bunch of pages, deals with rain. Ta'anit means fasting, so when is it that a person would fast? A person would fast when they needed rain. That was the classical public fast. Later on, in the last chapter, gets to the public fast that we're familiar with, the ones which are on the calendar and not caused by a lack of rain. Over here, the Mishnah says, Bishlosha b'mar cheshvan, which was yesterday, which is why I didn't make this topic till I already had a different topic prepared. And then at 5:30 yesterday, I realized yesterday was Gimel Mar Cheshvan, so I decided to change the topic to this. And somehow, I think I finished. Excuse me? What I'm going to do next week? Next, what I was thinking of doing, but again, what I prepared already was a class on, which I prepared before Simchas Torah, which was what happens if a Torah falls. I'm very pessimistic. But actually the opposite's true, because it's like if you take an umbrella with you, then there's no way that it rains. So if I prepare a class on this, then there's no way that it really happens. So I actually protected the entire Jewish community from any Torahs falling. But maybe we'll do that next week. We'll see.
Maybe you can do a lecture on death.
On death? V'shlosha b'mar cheshvan sho'alin et ha'geshamim. So here it uses the word sho'alim. So if you were familiar with Ta'anit from the beginning, you will know that there are two different words which are used. One is mazkirin, and the other is sho'alin. Mazkirin means to make reference to, and sho'alim means to make a request. It doesn't mean to ask as much as to ask for. Sho'alin means to make a request. So at one point, we make reference to the need for rain. So when did we start doing that? Right. On Simchat Torah, where we start to say, Mashiv HaRuach Umorid HaGeshem. And in our shul, the Chazan decided that it would be appropriate to do the whole tune, when it just feel like Geshem, to the tune of singing in the rain, which I don't think any of the Israelis appreciated. So that's when we start to be mazkir. We don't ask for anything then. We're just mentioning then that's one of the things that God does. Right? We're just making a statement that God does this and this and this, and God causes it to rain. So that's mazkirin, making reference to. On the other hand, to request rain, when do we start to do that? Well, it depends. So that's what the Mishnah deals with. When do we start to ask? When we ask for, then we say, V'tein tal umata l'bracha. Then we're making a request for rain. So that's what this Mishnah is referring to. The first opinion is, B'shlosha b'mar cheshvan sholin et geshamim. Rabban Gamliel omer b'shiv abo. So we have an argument. The first anonymous opinion is that on the third of Cheshvan, The second opinion of Rabbi Gamliel is on the 7th of Cheshvan. Why the 7th? Chamisha Asar Yom Achar HaChag. That this is meant to be 15 days after Sukkot. What's the significance of 15 days after Sukkot? So the Mishnah continues and says, Kidei Sheyagia Acharon Sheyisrael Linahar Prat. So that the person who had traveled the furthest will have already succeeded in getting home by that point. If you look at Rashi in source 2, Bishlosha b'mar cheshvan shalinta gishamim v'chulei ragamil om b'shivabo b'chamisha sayom achar achag klomar b'shiva b'mar cheshvan hu chamisha sayom chamisha asar achar achag kidei shegia acharon klomar kodem b'yat mayim l'nahar prat shu rachuk yoter, that till the water starts to swell up on the Euphrates, and that's the furthest distance that people would travel. Now, there's a couple of things that we realize right away. What's the first one that we realize? That this is very limited to travel conditions and to geographical considerations. Which means if you learned how to travel quicker, so maybe that would impact this opinion. If we traveled to different places, maybe that would also impact this. But this is saying is that the outermost area that we're concerned about is the Nahar Prat, and the longest time that it would take is 2 weeks before. And then, and the reason is that we don't want the people who traveled to be Ola L'Regel to be rained upon. Anybody remember anything about this, about the Kohen Gadol? Yeah, one of the things the Kohen Gadol says when he goes inside, bless you, when he goes into the Holy of Holies, he says, God, don't listen to the prayers of those who are traveling, because they may be saying, oh, better not rain. So what we do is that we stop 2 weeks earlier. I studied this with Rabbi Soloveitchik, I don't know, it was probably around 1981 or 82. So I asked him, so if that's the case, why don't we stop asking for rain 2 weeks before Pesach? He just didn't like the question. Any of you like the question? He didn't like it. So no, apparently, no. Let's just think about it this way. In Israel, if we still need rain, are we going to stop praying for rain because people are traveling? No, if we need the rain at that point, we're going to be still asking for rain. I guess that's what the answer is. But as I said, he didn't even like the question. Right, okay, good. So if we're starting to pray in Shemini Atzeret, what does that indicate? That we already want rain then. Which means theoretically, again, everything I'm saying right now is theoretical. Theoretically, if we can travel quicker, if after 3-4 days everybody gets in their planes and goes where they need to go, so maybe we should be asking immediately. Or for that matter, if the rain is not going to really impact the travel, maybe we should be asking for rain. Just start. Also, be mazkirin and sho'alin already right after Shemini Atzeret. When we say Marv, on that right after Simchat Torah, already that night, we should be asking for rain. Now, as far as the Mishnah was concerned, there's two dates which are given because there's an argument which is the right date. The halacha is like Rabbi Gamliel. And therefore, Zion Mar Cheshvan, when does that come out? Was that Sunday? Monday? Can you count? Today's the 4th. Sunday? Okay, so Saturday night. Yes? So today's the 4th. Friday's the 5th. Shabbos is the 6th. Sunday's the 7th, which means Saturday night for Maariv will be the first time that we're supposed to then start asking for rain. Which means that you know with 98% certainty what I'm going to speak about between Mincha and Maariv on Shabbos afternoon this week. The Gemara comes and presents a different opinion. Gemara. First of all, Amar Rabbi Eliezer, or Elazar. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Halacha Karabim Gamliel. So just in case we were concerned about the two opinions, the anonymous opinion, or Rabbi Gamliel, the Halacha is like an opinion. Tanya. But then we hear another opinion, which is found in a Braita. Hananya Omer uvigola ad shishim bitkufa. That in the exile, we have a different day to say this, and it says till the 60th of the Tkufa. Now, what exactly is the 60th day of the Tkufa? So, the Tkufa has nothing to do with Jewish days or dates. The Tkufa has to do with seasons. The seasons has to do with the sun and not the moon. Which means, and I'm not sure exactly what they're counting 60 from, but they're counting from the beginning of fall, 60 days into, towards the winter, and says that they begin to need the rain, uvugula, they start in the 60th. Rashi will explain at the bottom of source 2, uvugula shishim, uvugula in sho'alim ad shishim bitkufa, they only ask on the 60th of the tkufa, lefishu makom namuch, because that it's a lower-lying area, ve'ein tzrichim matar kol kach, and they do not need as much rain in that place. So over here, it seems to be what Hananya is telling us is that the law, again, as we saw, is like Rabbi Gamliel. But the law, like Rabbi Gamliel, only follows in Israel. So in Israel, when do we start to ask for rain? We'll start to ask for rain 2 weeks after the holiday. Why? By that time, anybody who came to visit, all the visitors went home. I guess if you have a visitor that stays too long, you can show them this, right? By 2 weeks. They're preventing the rain, right? By 2 weeks, send them all home. But that's only talking about in Israel. Hananya tells us that in other places, the needs are different, and because the need is different, so then it only begins 60 days after the Tkufa. Anybody want to guess what day that comes out to? December 4th or 5th. When is it the 5th? When it's a leap year. So it comes out December 4th every year. In a leap year, it's December 5th, because that's 60 days into the Tkufa, again, which is a solar-based thing. That's where our December 4th or 5th comes from. That's the 60 days before that. That may have been your intention. You were praying for my esrog tree, which didn't make it. I don't know. I don't know what to say. But that would not seem.
You don't see that anymore.
That would not. Well, we'll see when we do see that. But that's gonna lead us to more extreme situations. In the regular case, Hanani's telling us very clearly. Now you can argue with me, and you can say, or you can argue with Hananya, and you can say, Hananya, where in the world did you get this from? The Mishnah never said that. On the other hand, you can then argue back and say, well, the Mishnah was only talking about Israel. On the other hand, what can I say? The Mishnah was talking about everywhere. The Mishnah doesn't qualify. It says that's when we all start to pray. So that becomes an interesting tension. The Rambam, in his commentary to the Mishnah, now you all have heard of the Rambam, correct? You laugh. The Rambam was one of the greatest commentaries you ever had. Now, when I say that, you say, well, of course. And you're mainly thinking about books that he wrote when he was between 50 and 60 years old, including The Guide for the Perplexed and his Mishneh Torah, which is called his magnum opus. The Rambam wrote his first book when he was 16 years old. It was a dictionary of philosophical terms. He wrote a book which is called The Commentary to the Mishnah when he was around 20. Had he never written anything other than this book, The Commentary to the Mishnah, he probably would be remembered as one of the great rabbis of any age. Okay? He continued to write and his reputation grew afterwards, but this was his first great book. The Commentary to the Mishnah is written in Arabic, like almost all of the Rambam's writings except for the Mishnah Torah. And it is, till this day, one of the best commentaries to the Mishnah which are available. Even though at this point I would say that Kahati's commentary has surpassed all commentaries. The Rambam writes, in source 3, V'halacha k'Rabban Gamliel, V'kol zeb Eretz Yisrael, V'kol shehu domela. So he said, this applies to Israel, and any place which is similar to Israel. V'chein, kol ma sheyemar hala bizmanei hata'aniyot. Similarly, not just regarding when we start to ask for rain, but also when we start to fast when the rain hasn't come. Einu ela be'eretz Yisrael v'kol makom she'aviro karov la'avira. And any place where the climate will be similar to Israel, which means the Mishnah now will continue over the next couple of pages to tell us specific dates. If no rain comes by Hanukkah time, or no rain comes by, and it gives more and more dates, this is the fasting becomes more and more severe, mainly who's involved in the fast. So the Rambam says, well, this is true, both parts. The fasting, which means the response to the lack of rain, when I say a few pages, not an hour of pamphlets, but in the Mishnah and the Gemara itself. When the Rambam says, both regarding the fasting and regarding asking for rain, that's in Israel and the and Israel's climate. Aval bishar ha'artzaot, hareti ha'shela bizman ha'ra'ui l'gashamim ba'oto ha'makom. But in all other places, when should we start praying for rain? In a time which is appropriate in that particular place. Now, how does he know this? How does the Rambam know that that's what you should do? Because that's what he concludes based upon Hananya. Because Hananya said, no, hold it. Only in Israel this is play. We do it like this, up to 60 days. Did the Rambam quote Hananya directly, or is he conceptualizing and applying Hananya? Well, obviously the latter. And what is he saying? So therefore, just like Hananya applies the principle as necessary where he lives, we need to apply it as necessary wherever we may live. And he continues and says, V'rei oto azman ki ilu hu shiva b'mar cheshvon, v'im nit achru gashim b'machrei oto azman, l'fi yachas hazmanim elu amrim kan, harei elu metanim kamosh niskar kan. And the fasting should only come if it's proportionate, the delay in rain, as it would have been to the 7th of cheshvon. L'fi sheyesh artzot she'ein zman hagashamim matchil elu minisan. There are times, there are places, that the rainy season only begins in the spring. And there are places that in Mar Cheshvan, it's the summer. What's the Rambam referring to? The southern hemisphere. The Rambam was very smart. And he says there are places that are completely inverse to our experience. We'll get there. Ve'ein hagishamim bo livracha ela ma'abed u'mashmid. And if you get bracha, if you get rain during this particular time, it's not going to be rain which will bring blessing; it will be destructive. Ve'echi shalu anshei oto makom gishamim b'mar cheshvan. And how can people in those places pray for rain at a time that it will be destructive for them? Ha'im ein ze sheker. That will be a lie for them to be asking for rain at that point. Zedivar nachonu barur. The Rambam writes, this is clear, obvious, nothing more to say. By the way, he wrote well when he was 20? Pretty good, pretty convincing. He gets his point across. Yes? He was very smart, by the way. By the way, a couple years later, he wrote another book. 40 years went by. He wrote a book called The Mishnah Torah. Source number 4. Mishiva yamim b'mar cheshvan sholinu tekishamim b'vrchat shanim kol zman shemaskir hageshem b'medver murim b'eretz Yisrael. So he says, from the 7th we start to ask for rain. On the 7th of mar cheshvan we ask for rain. He goes, but where? In Israel. Aval b'shinar uv'suria uv'mitzrayim uv'mekomot hasmuchot la'elu b'hadomim lahin sholinu tekishamim b'yom shishim achar tekufat tishrei. But in other places, and he lays the places out, the places surrounding Israel that are farther away, that are lower-lying places, they only start on the 16th day of Tekufah, December 4th. Next halacha. Makomot she'ehen tzrichim l'gishamim b'yamot ha'chama, kagon ayei hayam harechokim, far-flung places that need rain at other times, sho'alin et ha'gishamim b'eit she'en tzrichim lehem b'shomea tfila. They make their request in shomea tfila. Now, did the Rambam just now change his opinion, or did he say the same thing? So, what is Shomea Tefillah? What's the purpose of Shomea Tefillah? What? A kolbo. That's a place that you can throw in any prayer that you want. Hopefully it's appropriate, but you can throw anything you want in by Shomea Tefillah. For the Rambam to come and tell us here that this should be said by Shomea Tefillah, that's like saying, okay, of course you can say anything you want by Shomei HaTfilah, but what did you say by Birkat HaShanim? which means the Rambam in source number 4, despite the attempt of many great people to reconcile with what he says in source number 3, does not seem to be the same opinion. Because the Rambam in source number 4 is saying, if you live in a far-flung place, then what do? So then you fix it, you make your own personal prayer in Shomei HaTfilah. But he doesn't refer to what you do in Birkat HaShanim, which is really what he was referring to in the Mishnah. As I said, you can try to nuance this as much as you want and try to show that he really didn't contradict himself. If you succeed, you know that you will join many other people. By the way, did the Rambam ever contradict himself between his commentary on the Mishnah and his Mishnah Torah? Hundreds of times. If you want to read all about this, Rabbi Aaron Adler wrote his doctoral dissertation on this topic, and you can go through all the places that he brings down, and you can see what he claims, which is mainly that the Rambam, when he was young, more often than not followed the traditional opinion which he received from his father and teachers. When he got older, he became much more independent and gave his own opinions. Whether that is the overriding, it's hard to say. In certain cases, somebody can change their mind. Certainly, somebody who writes another book 40 years later. We change our mind on a daily basis. The Rambam could have changed his mind, and he does seem to change his mind over here. Now, why would he change his mind? Or where did he get this idea from? Because so far, you liked what he said in his commentary on the Mishnah, because it was really pretty compelling. On the other hand, that's going to be a little difficult to reconcile with source number 5, which unfortunately for the Rambam is a Gemara, a couple of pages later after the first source that we read. Sholchu le b'nei Ninve le Rabbi. Now this is very significant because Rabbi would be Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi is the one who publishes the Mishnah. And they ask, Kigon Anan, people like us, the afilu b'tkufot Tammuz ba'inun mitra, that we need rain even in Tammuz, which is the summer, hechi na'avid, how are we supposed to proceed? Ki yichidim daminan o ki rabim daminan? Are we to be considered like individuals or like a community? Now, what exactly do they mean by this in the question? They explain, ki yichidim daminan, should we be considered like individuals, and therefore when an individual has a request to make of God, what does he do? He makes that request in Shomea Tfila. Or should he be considered Kirabim Daminun Ubibrichat Hashanim? And then you would make the request, what is it, the ninth bracha? I think it's the ninth bracha. In Birchat Hashanim, in the Amidah, it's in the earlier part of the Amidah, and say Vitain Talmata Vracha. So that's the question the people of Ninveh asked. Okay? How would you answer that question? Do you like their question? It's a very fair question. They're saying, what are we supposed to do? Shalach lahu. So here you have Shelot v'tshuvot, response. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi answers and says, Ki yichidim demitu, you should be considered as individuals. Uv'shomea tefillah, and make your statement in Shomea tefillah. The Gemara doesn't end there. Meitve, a question came up. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Eimatai, when is this supplying? Bizman shehashanim ketikunon v'yisroshu nalad matan. When everything is the way it should be, and the Jews live in their land. Av bizman hazeh, hakol lefi hashanim, hakol lefi hamakomot, hakol lefi hazman. Which means Rabbi Yehuda has a dissenting opinion against Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, and he says, no, the whole thing goes according to where you are, and again, like the opinion that the Rambam gave. Amr le matnita ramit ale de Rebbe. He says, no, are you going to question Rebbe? Rebbe tanahu polig. Rebbe is allowed to have his opinion. Meaning Rebbe really still a Tana. Everyone else is discussing this already. Amorim, the next generation. May havayala. The Gemara asks, okay, how did this topic conclude? Rav Nachman amar bibirkat hashanim. Rav Sheshet amar bishomei tefila. So here we have two versions on what the conclusion was and what they should do in Ninveh. The hilchata, what's the law? B'shomei tefillah. The law is that they're supposed to do it in shomei tefillah. Okay, did I lose anybody in the last minute? Okay, so let's go back. What did this Gemara ask and answer? The question came up regarding, this was a real question, a community of Ninveh. They asked Rebbe, what should we do? Are we considered a community or are we considered individuals? Why would they say that they're a community? Maybe this is the same thing as Hananya. Hananya says that by where he lives, it should be 60 days after the Tkufa, and not the 7th of Mar Cheshvan. So they're asking, what are we considered? Rebbe gives the answer, and maybe this is similar to what my mother suggested before, that maybe Rebbe Yehuda Nasi is saying, we have a country, we have a state, Israel is the center, and everybody prays the way that it works in Israel. And that's what the Mishnah says. And maybe it's only later, after the exile, that then we begin to make this more appropriate to other places. Now, historically, what I'm saying is not that simple. Because even during Bayit Sheni, when Rebbe was alive, Rebbe was a little post-Bayit Sheni, I'm saying even Bayit Sheni, certainly post-Bayit Sheni, the majority of the Jews in the world did not live in Israel. The majority of the Jews in the world lived in Babylon. So, to claim that Israel should still be the center is something we can understand. We could definitely appreciate Kimitzion Teitzei Torah Dvar Hashem Yerushalayim. We can understand how the rabbis of Yerushalayim or the rabbis of Israel would flex their muscles a little bit and tell Jews outside of Israel, by the way, I don't care that you're out of Israel. I don't care that you're a majority. The law is you pray for rain based on what's going on in Israel. And maybe that's what you have in mind as well. The only problem with that would be, if you were correct, then you should start saying it on Zayin Cheshvan. You should start saying it when they start saying it in Israel. So the fact that we don't start saying it in diaspora when they start saying it in Israel would seem to counter that approach. What this Gemara is coming in and asking, so what do we do in Ninveh? Are we considered to be a whole community, and therefore we should say it when we need it, or are we like individuals? And what's Rebbe's answers? Individuals. Nonetheless, we find in the Gemara later on a difference of opinion, whether this answer was accepted or not. We find an argument, but the bottom line is that an individual community, okay, I'm being very careful now, an individual community outside of Israel, what do? They still follow Israel. That seems to be the conclusion of the Gemara. Now, of course, you can come back and ask, does this agree with Hananya or disagree with Hananya? And what exactly is going on? Let's leave that. But at least now we can understand why the Rambam would have backed down and ended up saying that people in all other places end up putting it in Shomei Tefillah. Are we okay so far now? The person who got involved with this more than anyone else was the Rush. The Rush is known as Rabbeinu Asher. He was born 1250 in Germany. He was a student of the Maharami Rutenberg. And if you remember anything about Maharam's biography, perhaps you remember that he was kidnapped and held for ransom, and he was the one who ordered that he not be ransomed out. But you already now can appreciate another point. If he was kidnapped and he was held for ransom, it wasn't the nicest place for Jews to live. His student, the Rush, Rabbi Asher ben Yechiel, he concludes that this is not the best place for him to stay. He is, at the point when he does this, the leading rabbi of Ashkenaz. He's what we would call today the Gadol Hador. And he picks up and he leaves Germany. I mean, I'll read the sentence from his biography. You'll love the irony. Due to persecution of the Jews by the Germans, okay, of course, this was a long time ago, the Rush fled to Spain. Okay. In 1303. So that means he's 53 years old. He's really at the height of his career. And he dies in Spain, where he becomes the chief rabbi before he dies. He becomes chief rabbi of Spain afterwards, and he dies in 1327. He is one of the most important people in terms of the history of halacha, for the simple reason is that we all know that we have Ashkenazim and Sfaradim and different customs developed. He is the most significant person who lives in both places, knows both customs, and writes about both customs, and writes about traveling from place to place. Along the way, from traveling from Germany to Spain, he does stop off in Provence, and he will tell us a little bit about Provence along the way over here. So anyway, something happened. If you want, his son writes about it in the beginning, and this is in source number 6, and tells us exactly when it happened. V'yihi b'shnat 5,073 l'briyat ha'olam. What year is that? That would be 1313. Right? Yes? What? That would be 1313. Something happens. Actually, it would be... Yeah, it would be 1313. Erev Pesach 1313, this is what happens. Ne'etzru ha'geshamim, in Spain, there was a drought. V'lo himtir kol ha'choref elu ma'at mizir. There was practically not a drop of rain the entire winter. V'karu tzom l'tchanein la'ashem l'teit matar al p'nei adama. V'yibaleu rishon shel Pesach re'i tfilat arvit. V'adoni avi harash. And this happened... The following story happened on the first night of Passover, right after they finished praying Maariv. Now, what's going to happen in the next day in Shul? They're going to stop asking for rain already. That's it. Rain is over. V'aduni avi harash hayo yoshev al petach beito. He was by the, you know, men like to schmooze on the way home from Shul. So a couple of people walked him home. V'anachnu tzat mehachaverim omdim alav miyamino mismolo. I mean, he's giving you very specific where this happened. And you're saying, his wife finished preparing for the Seder, get inside and start the Seder ready. But this is what he was talking about outside. V'yomar, and he says, Ata hayatov l'orer hadavar shemelam t'mahati alav. He says, I want to bring up something. Now's a good time to bring up something which I've always been wondering about. Lama lo yaskiru v'yishalu ageshem ad shavuot. Why don't we pray for rain all the way until Shavuot? Some people said, they said, you know, you're right, we still need rain, so we should still be praying for rain. Why don't you make an announcement tomorrow that we're still praying for rain all the way till Shavuot? And people liked the idea. And they sent a message to the chazan, for the shliach tzibur, that the next day, we're going to keep on praying for rain. And they did this. V'yaskiru b'nei ha'kneset ha'gdola ha'yugim u'midot v'yikol k'yaskiru v'yinerash miktzad ha'chachamim asher lo haya davar be'etzatam. And when he did this, there was an incredible murmuring going on in the shul because there were other rabbis there who they weren't consulted. You know, what is going on? This is against the law. This is against the custom. V'yutziu kol le'mor asher lo haya ra'ui la'skiru. People said he's absolutely wrong. How in the world can you say Mashiv Aruch Mirda Geshem already on Pesach? Shesiman klalahu, that the Gemara says that to rain after Pesach is already considered to be a sign of a curse. Vitapek adoni avi harash, my father was calm. V'lo diber v'yomahum uma, he did not say a word that day. Ad lel chol shomoed, until chol moed. V'yachtov migilat sefer l'chazek t'varav v'zeh tirpa. He then wrote an entire essay to back himself up, and we're told by the son of the Rush that we are back. This is it. By the way, one of the sons of the Rush was the Tor. So the whole Tor Shulchan Aruch begins with this perspective of knowing both the Ashkenaz and the Sephardic customs. Al kishamati ki yesh tmehim al dvarai bati lefereish ma shamarti she'ein ro'oi lefsok mi laskir lo she'ol ata biyom tov rishon shel Pesach v'lo min kadoi ela mikfar yamim rabim ba'ashkenaz nitra'amti al shnei dvarim. He goes back and he says, when I still lived in Germany, there were two things that bothered me. She'ra'iti she'no'agim biyamim halalo ha'echad she'einun sho'ol limagashim kitikun. One thing which always bothered me is they don't ask for rain in the proper way. And he goes, and even though it says, and he quotes the Mishnah and Hananiah, and we'll skip a little bit to where it's underlined, v'anan b'chol miltaz linen b'ter chachmei bavel, v'avdinen kavoteyu. We follow Bavel. Now this is, what he's about to say in the next couple of lines, is one of the reasons I thought this would be so good for today. Not just because it's Zayin Mer Cheshvan, but also to understand how halacha works a little bit more. We have the elders, we have the Sanhedrin, we have the Mishnah, we have the Gemara, we have the Talmud Bavli, we have the Talmud Yerushalmi, we had Chachmei Eretz Yisrael, we had Chachmei Bavel, we have Chachamim that lived in all other places. For some reason, when it comes to deciding halacha, the Talmud Yerushalmi was pushed to the side, and the Talmud Bavli is the one that was accepted. Now, why was this? For a very simple reason. The Jewish community in Israel dwindled in number after the destruction of the Second Beit HaMikdash. Afterwards, we have the Hadrianic persecutions, 10 martyrs, which took place over at least a generation of time. And there were less and less Jews there till we got to a point that the community was decimated. Anybody know what the final act was that caused the decimation of the community? A major earthquake destroyed the north of Israel. I don't know if anybody told you this before you bought your homes here. But you are in a major fault over here. And 420. A major earthquake destroyed the north, and that seems to be really the end of the active Jewish community. But even during that point, the Jewish community in Israel was smaller in number and in influence and in rabbis and sages than it was in Bavel at the same time. A generation earlier, when Rav Yochanan was here, it was a different situation. But during that time already, it had really all but fallen apart. Over the next 500 years, there was no question that Bavel was the center of the Jewish people. Questions that came up went to Bavel. The Talmud Bavli continues to be a live document. What I mean by that is the Talmud Bavli is edited by the year 500, but the discussions are still going on while the Yerushalmi is already closed and there's not much discussion going on in there, which means the important rabbis and discussions of law all took place in Bavel during that point. And that's why the Talmud Bavli won out. It was relevant when there was no longer a community in Israel. And that continued till modern times. Of course, there were a couple of times along the way that a community in Israel grew again. Now, the Rush is admitting one thing, but is going to reject something else, as you're about to see. He says, "Vanan b'chom miltaz linan batachachmei Bavel, vavdinan kavatayu." He says, I accept the sages of Bavel, that the law is according to what they say. Now, what does he mean by that? He'll tell you what he means. Wherever we find arguments between the Chachamim from Bavel and Eretz Israel, what is predominant? Bavel's predominant. The Talmud Bavel chashvinon ikar. The Talmud Bavli is considered to be more important. All this applies by areas of law. But when we're talking about following Bavel in terms of their climate, he said that's an absurdity. He goes, I will follow the Chachamim of Bavel in their halachic opinions. But there's no reason for me to live in Germany or for me to live in Spain and follow the climate of Bavel and pray for rain according to when they need rain in Bavel. Do you like his argument? Right? That's a very fair argument. Debekol shochenet amayim rabim, debavel shochenet amayim rabim, v'lo yitzrichim geshamim ad shishim utkufa. They live in an area where there's a lot of water sources and they don't need rain until much later on. He says, no, when I was in Ashkenaz, I was very bothered by this because we needed the rain already in Tishrei for the crops to succeed. If it didn't rain in Tishrei, then the crops would have been ruined. And he goes on to say, because the birds would have come at that time and eaten up all of the seeds, and the crops would have been gone. He He said, so therefore in Ashkenaz, why should we follow Bavel? We should follow Israel. Ki Rabban Gamliel. Ki bedavar hazeh, ein machloket bein b'nei Bavel, b'nei Eretz Yisrael. There's no argument over here. Shinu elu tam l'dvarim shururin la'asot kach. Ve'elu nun tam l'dvarim shururin la'asot kach. There's no argument over here. Elo sheba Bavel yosin kefi yatzarech shelahem. That Bavel, they followed what they needed. V'hamishna shomer tshashol b'marcheshon, nishnit b'Eretz Yisrael. The Mishnah was written in Israel. Kefi yatzarech lahem. It's written according. By the way, first of all, what's very interesting over here, he's giving you a real historical analysis. And he's breaking down halacha, and I don't want to get too far, but this is dangerous. Because I can take the same approach, and I can go to all kinds of halachot, and say, no, this is only halachically over here and over there, and applies over, but that's what he's arguing. I mean, you can't gloss this over, that's what he says. He says, where it's underlined, the next portion of Bnei Yisrael, Nishneta Mishnah, Kafi Makomam, Kafi Tzarcham, Hashdvarim Kal Bachomer, Im bnei Bavel osim kefi makomam kefi tzarchei b'shinoi ha-mishnah. Kol shkein shbnei Ashkenaz yasu kefi tzarcham shelo b'shinoi ha-mishnah. He says, in Bavel they followed according to their needs. Certainly in Ashkenaz, I always felt they should follow their needs. So over here, we now learn something. That when he got up on Pesach night and said, you know what, maybe we really should still be asking for rain. This wasn't a flippant thing that he just thought about that moment. This was something which was bothering him for a long time. And his halakhic opinion was that we should be praying for rain when we need rain.
Like Israel? Or
so over here, he said Ashkenaz like Israel, but he's about to say, you'll see, okay, he's going to declare independence from Israel and Bavel in a moment. Alma shekol elu hazmanim, both times, Hananya and Rabbi Gamliel, einan el lefitzorach hamakom v'hazman. That's according to need, the place, and the time. By the way, who does this remind you of? This is what the Rambam said before he backed down. The Rush will go on to quote the Rambam, and he will try to also show you that he never really backed down. It's going to be hard, but and we'll skip that, but he does do that. V'davar yedua sheba Ashkenaz ikar kiyum atuva hu ayidei geshemim shem Pesach latzeret. He also goes on to tell us some other interesting things. Go down to the last third of the page. Kol elo advrim danti lefnei rabotai ba'ashkenaz. He said, I discussed all these things with my teachers in Ashkenaz. V'lo haya adama arer ledvarai. Nobody was particularly moved by what I said. Elo sha'amur einan esrichin l'shanotam in hag ba'ashkenaz. They still, he's telling us that what? Yakim. No, not just Yakim. There was another point. Why? Ki ein atzirak kashamim matzoy sham. There was never a drought there. Have you ever been to Germany?
Yeah, it rains all the time.
It rains all the time. It rains over, that's why they're all depressed. It rains over 300 days a year there. I think it's around 320 days a year they have rain there.
Yeah.
Maybe we can work something out with them. Maybe they can, instead of reparations, they can export some of the rain over here. So he said that they weren't all that moved by his arguments for a very simple reason. It was a non-issue. It always rained in Germany, and no one was going for it. He said the opposite was true. If there was ever a problem in Germany, it was too much rain. When I traveled through Provence, which was most of the time France, but these things tend to move around, from country to country. Shamati bimon, I don't know how to pronounce that. Monfischler. I'm sorry, I'm sure I have mispronounced it, and I apologize. Come on, where's that French? I was waiting for you to say something. Okay. Shayu maski rimaka shirim zain bimarcheshvan. He says in Provence, they followed Israel. And I liked what they did there. When did you stop asking? They stopped just like the Mishnah does. I said, do you still need rain until Shavuot? Yeah, they need it. The Eif Shalut Tfodat Kain Belimatar. He says they can't succeed without rain. But married to them, Koldver. And then I said, well, my opinion is they should keep on praying, which means the Rush is telling us that this has been going on in his mind for a while, and he pushed them there as well. Ela Sha'amru, they said, I skipped a little bit, Masha Anu Shalim B'Shivaber Macheshvan Kachen Higu Chachamim Harishonim. By the way, this is very interesting. Should I tell you why? Yes, I'll tell you why. They're telling us that this was their ancient custom to do in the 7th of Cheshvan. And not following what Hananya said, what they did in Bavel. So I'm going to pause for a second. You all, I hope, have figured out by now, and I can show you all kinds of people who've said this. What we do all over the world is pray like they did in Bavel. Which means it seems to be not like the Rush, and there are only two places. There's Bavel and Eretz Yisrael, which means the Rush's critique that this is part of the predominance of Bavel over Eretz Yisrael or the Talmud Bavli winning out all over the world, one of the issues is that we follow them in terms of Shishim Yom Achar Tkufa, read December 4th. The Rush points out very logically there are lots of places that this is just not the case. Now, I want you to think for a second in terms of spheres of influence. There's a fellow around, I'm not going to mention him by name, maybe I'll take him on later on in the year, but he's opened up this whole institute where he's trying to get to ancient Israel custom, what the custom was in Israel, the original Jewish custom. It's as if to say that any Torah from outside of Israel is not authentic. Of course, Sinai was outside of Israel, so maybe that's a little authentic, but they want to get more towards the Talmud Yerushalmi instead of Talmud Bavli. But the reasons the Bavli were accepted were not just because they continued on. It was more of the rabbis were there. They were on a higher level. But nonetheless, in a couple of areas, including Kitniot, they want to get back and get rid of any of these later customs that were picked up in Ashkenaz. Now, what I'm about to show you, what I'm about to show you, is, I believe, one example of something which is a much larger theme, and that goes down to spheres of influence. When the Jews came to Europe, where did they come from? When they came to Europe, where did they come from? And where did they come from? Which is, how did they get there? They came from Israel. They came from Israel. They went directly from Israel to a lot of these places. Consequently, a lot of the ancient customs of Ashkenaz are minhagei Eretz Yisrael. And the sphere of influence of Bavel didn't always make it there. So in this particular example, when he tells us that in Provence, he asks them, why are you asking on Zayin Mar Cheshvan? What do they answer? This, as far back as we know, this is what we were told to do. This is our ancient custom. So what does that tell you? That they followed the custom of Eretz Yisrael, and they didn't follow the custom of Bavel. By the way, what are they not doing? They're not doing what he really wants. What does he really want? He really wants them to be asking when they need it, but that's not what they're doing. What they're doing is following Eretz Yisrael and not following Bavel, which means as far as they're concerned, Rabbi Gamliel is telling what the halacha is, and they don't care about Hananya. It's not relevant to them. So as I said, that's a very interesting historical document or statement that we have over here from the Rush. He goes on, I'm not going to read the whole thing inside because I want to get to a couple of other things before we finish today. He goes on to make a distinction, because obviously he knows about the Gemara, about Nineveh, and he goes on to make a distinction between one area, which he says Nineveh is, versus an entire country or continent. He says, when the Gemara says that Nineveh are considered as individuals, he says that's only one small area. But you can't call a whole continent individuals. And therefore, the Rush comes to the conclusion that if you have a whole continent, a whole country, a whole large area, they should pray just like they do in Bavel, which means not to follow Bavel. Should I say that again? Sounds like what Rav Breuer used to say, right? Rav Breuer used to say that we should learn Tanakh like the Mefarshim did, and that's without the Mefarshim. Okay? So over here, what he was advocating was to do what they did in Bavel, which means not to follow Bavel, which means what do they do in Bavel? They picked a time which was right for them. So he says that's the same thing that we should do in any large area. By the time we get to the end of the tshuva over here, which goes on, the Rush backs down. The last couple of lines, he writes, "V'rotiki atu et lev akahal levotiki bel mimini divrei Elokim chayim." When I saw that the community refused to accept from me the words of the living God, it's pretty good, right? He's convinced that he's right. He does not back down that his opinion is right, but he says that I saw that they didn't want to accept me. Gam ani chazarti bi milishola skir b'beit haKnesset. I also stopped making reference to rain or asking for rain in the shul. Shanin mitpalel bo. Afal pi shayiti yachol l'shol, even though I could have followed what I felt was the right practice. Afal pi shani yachid. Kevin shetzorech rabim hu, because I felt I was doing it for the whole community because everyone needs rain. Mikol makom lo ritziti lasot agudot agudot. I did this to avoid machloket. He says, I feel this was the right thing to do, but nonetheless, to avoid machloket, I backed down from my opinion. V'lo hayiti kotev b'chol ha-moed, ki lo hergalti b'kach. I would not have written this whole essay on chol ha-moed, which he does sit down and write it. He says he's unaccustomed to do this. Elot shetzorech in order to avoid, because there was a whole argument going on which broke out over here, and he felt that there was a chilul Hashem, and it was also necessary for the holiday to an extent, and he signs Asher ben HaRav Yechiel, Zechorna Levracha. So he gives his opinion, and he does back down. What does all this do for us? Ultimately, nothing. Ultimately, nothing, other than, I think, being very interesting, it doesn't do all that much for us. Even though the Shulchan Aruch of Yosef Karo, which we'll look at right now, he follows the Rambam, but not in the Perush Mishnayot. He follows the Rambam in what he wrote in the Mishnah Torah. Look at Source 7. B'chod Hashanim Tzarech Lomar Ba B'yimod HaGeshamim V'tein Tam Baruch Ha Mitchin L'Shol Matar B'chutz La'aretz. You notice that he starts Chutz La'aretz. He doesn't start with Israel. He starts what we do in Chutz La'aretz. B'tfilat Arvit Shel Yom Shishim Achar Tekufat Tishrei. U'v'eretz Yisrael Mitchin L'Shol Milel Zayin b'mar chesvan. The next halacha, yichidim hatzuchim lematar b'yimot hachama, ein sholim oto b'ruchad hashanim, elo b'shamei tefila, v'yafilu ir gdola keninve, o eretz achad kula kamo svard b'chlala, o ashkenaz b'chlala, ki yichidim damu b'shamei tefila. Which is specifically, again, the opposite of what the Rosh said, because he said a whole country should be considered to be independent, and they ask what they need for, and his conclusion, the Rav Yosef Karo's conclusion is like the Rambam, and the again, he went a little further than the Rambam did, but it seems to be that a place like Nineveh, which was a major city, just like they're considered individuals in the bottom line of the Gemara, so therefore even a whole country and continent. And by the way, the Rush's assertion that there's a distinction between perhaps a city of Nineveh and a whole country or continent is not all that convincing. Generally, what's an individual who needs rain? Right? My brother-in-law has a juice factory. He prays for rain for whenever he knows he needs the fruit to be, right? So I don't know, I can ask him at which point he prays. Whenever he needs, I'm sure in Shemaya Tefillah he's praying for rain, but that's an individual. But Nineveh is a whole city. That's not an individual. For the Gemara to come and say that the conclusion is that even all of Nineveh is considered as individuals, that sort of tells us that the conclusion over here, that there's either Bavel or Eretz Yisrael and nothing else, that seems to be the conclusion. I just want to show you, I love the Aruch HaShulchan over here. Look on source 12 on the last page for a moment. V'anan b'nei chutz la'aretz bata b'nei Bavel garinan. We are dragged, literally, after the custom of all of Bavel. Kamo b'chol adinim, just as we do in all kinds of laws. So again, this is directly against what the Rush said. I mean, the Rush said, in other laws we follow Bavel, we follow the conclusion of the Chachmei Bavel, but not over here. V'afa gav d'l'chor ein ze inyan l'dinim, v'karkat av Rambam perish ha-mishna b'ta'anit, sham d'havi t'loy b'niyot v'zman, sh'tzarech l'matar. And he says, and even though maybe you should think this is different, as the Rambam himself suggested, most places in Europe, they cannot plant in the winter. It's too cold. Most places in Europe, they would only plant the wheat, he tells us very clearly over here, they could only plant the wheat at, in the springtime. And therefore, they would need the rain in the springtime. He goes, in the winter, we don't need any rain whatsoever. Because it's too cold for anything to grow there then. And he goes, the Rush spoke about it, and then where it's underlined again, and the Rush himself says that what he said was not accepted. I don't recall seeing that in the Rush. I'm not saying it's not there. I'm just saying I read it through. I don't recall seeing that. But he goes even further. And he says, and the Rambam himself went against what he wrote in his commentary to the Mishnah, as we have seen. So he doesn't try to reconcile it. He just rejects the opinion of the Rush and the Rambam. And then he writes, V'chein stamu rabotenu balei ha-shulchan aruch, and that's what's written in the Shulchan Aruch, as we just saw. V'chein halacha, and that is the law. V'chol ha-mipakpek b'zeh ra'uy la'onesh. And whoever... getting a little defensive. And whoever even questions this is deserving of punishment. Source 14, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, who was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, he writes, he has a question from New Zealand. What are we supposed to do in New Zealand? And he you want to see the question. Anu toshvei Zealandia hachadasha. So do you know what Zealandia hachadasha is? New Zealand. She he bechelak hadromi shel kadur haaretz umishunetz leinu zmanei akayitz v'achorv mishel midinon Europa. Ki akayitz matchil b'yimei chag sukot v'achorv matchil b'chag v'ezer. But by the way, we now realize something, that even in Europe was the problem. Because even in Europe, they needed the rain in the spring. This is not something which is unique to them, but they're asking, saying, well, this is a little absurd for us to be praying for rain when we have an inverse calendar. So he writes, we find something similar, and the Rush dealt with this. The last paragraph, L'chem dinat New Zealand, al tishanumi minhag Yisrael b'kol tfutzot, sh'arei suchot tamru v'tein talmatar. And what he tells them to do is to ask in Shomei Tefillah for what they need personally. That any place who's outside of Israel follows Bavel, which is really the opposite conclusion, which means, wouldn't we have felt much better, as my mother suggested before, that wherever we live, we should be following Israel. And what do we find, in fact? That wherever we live, we're following for... So we're praying for rain in Iran and Iraq right now. We're not. We live in Israel. So it's bad enough that they live in Chutzlar. It's all the people who will one day listen to this tape and so on. So I just want them to realize, on top of everything else in Chutzlar, they're also praying for rain for Iran and Iraq, because that's where Bavel is. And I hope that they appreciate that irony. Yes. Except for one thing.
Yeah.
The Gemara concluded against him.
I understand that.
Okay, that's a problem.
But did they ever give a reason other than this is the way we originally wrote it?
It seems to be that originally they made a takana, they made a gzera. Not even a gzera, a takana, that this is how you pray, and they just, and there's only two things. Yeah, why? Except for Bavel.
I think they're upside down. It means that their chagim are upside down. Not only their ethical. It means that they're completely out of sync, and they should be aware that they're out of sync. And if you start changing it, then you say, okay, where we are is just as important as being somewhere else. And it's not true.
Okay. I can't argue.
Right.
They can say there's spring, the Shabbat Pesach. Okay, that certainly makes sense. A couple of other small points tangential to this topic. What happens if you start to pray, you're here in Israel, you start to say it, and then you go to Chutz La'aretz? What do you do? So, first of all, once you start saying it, you don't stop. What if you What if you are living in Israel, but you're outside of the country? When they start to say it in Israel, so what exactly do you do? So we have a couple of different opinions regarding this. There's a look at source number 13. Hilchuk Tanot writes, Bnei Eretz Yisrael, im yesh lam isha uvanim be'eretz Yisrael, afal pi she'ein da'ato lechzor bizman ha'gishamim, shol ki bnei Eretz Yisrael. That means you pray where your family is. So I assume this would be the same thing a woman would pray. If her family is in Israel, even though he or she are traveling outside, your spouse and children, that's where your heart should be. I thought this was very romantic. I don't know if... No. These are the people that are really your immediate family. This is who you're praying for. You're praying for your own family sustenance. So therefore, that's what rain is. You want them to have sustenance. So here you do find that opinion that you pray for whatever is going on, but that's because your family is there. In source 15, the Prima Gadim writes, Ben Eretz Yisrael, b'chutz la'aretz, o lehefich, ayim prichadash imdato b'toch shana lechzor sha'ol kimkomo. If you have in mind within the year to come back, then you pray according to where you originally come from, either Israel or Chutzlart. But if you're there only after a year you intend to go back, then you're already considered part of the community. So he seems to be telling us that. And by the way, this is a big question for many, many laws, including second day of Chag, including many, many laws. At which point, including taxes, at which point do you become a member of that community in order to have to pray like they pray? Okay. As I said, in many areas this comes up. Here he tells us that it's a year. The only thing I don't like about what he says is he quoted a source which doesn't say what he says. 16, he quoted the Pri Chadosh. The Pri Chadosh writes that should be Bnei. Bnei Yitzro Shabo L'chutz La'aretz Imdato L'chzor Bizman She'lat HaGishamim. He doesn't say within a year. He says while the rain is still falling. If you intend to return while the rain still falls, Sholk Bnei Eretz Yisrael, which means if you will still be part of the rainy season, so then you already start the whole rain. Meaning you will return and be in Israel during the rainy season, then you already pray the whole rainy season like them. It doesn't say what he is quoted as saying. There are other...
Yeah.
Both ways. The Prima Gadim had it both ways. Prima Gadim had it both ways. Your place that you were where you're supposed to be, not where you're traveling. The Birkei Yosef, which is an 11, he says wherever you are, that's what you should be praying for. He doesn't go for this. If you're in Israel during the drought, you're going to suffer. What does it make a difference that within a year you're going to go back? You're suffering from the drought right now. So he says he doesn't agree with this, and he says wherever you are, that's what you should. That's what you should follow. So again, I would get into this situation almost every year, traveling somehow between the 7th, right, of Cheshvan and between the 5th. And generally what one would do is one would avoid being a Shliach Tzibur, which is not a problem for most of you, and pray like we would pray for Israel, even though that we're in Chutz La'aretz. There are all kinds of specific cases that could come up over here. So I'm saying it is worth, if one has this in mind, it is worthwhile questioning about it. But as I said, best avoided and best being here. There is one, you want to ask something? You had a question or no? There is, yeah. Right. It's some kind of date that has to do with the fall. I don't know exactly which date. It's not the equinox. It's not the solstice. I don't know exactly what that date is. Right. I don't know. I actually started looking for that this morning to try to figure out what exactly that means. What I think, if you divide the year into four parts, if you divide it into four parts of winter, spring, and summer. Okay. This is your homework to figure out what exactly the 60th day is. One more thing. Even though the rush was rejected, and you see forcibly even, what happens if you live in, let's get a good case over here, you live in a place that needs the rain after Pesach, and you made a mistake and you said Mashiva Rucham Rida Geshem, or you said Tain Bracha, there are a lot of people who will then say, don't go back and daven again. Why? Because even though we rejected the rush, maybe he wasn't wrong. Which means, what it comes down to it, so in order to daven again, your prayer has to be a lie. And even though we say you should pray like the people in Bavel, it's very hard for rabbis now to come back and say, but if you pray, if you did follow the rush and did what was logical and you did what you prayed for what you really needed for, did you lie when you said that? No, what you said was completely true. So there are a lot of opinions that will say, we reject the rush, you'll get a punishment if you even question, right? Like the Aruch HaShulchan said, even question all of this. But nonetheless, when it came to what we call b'diavad, afterwards, you happen to have followed that without, you know, paying attention, that they're very, very hesitant to obligate someone to pray again, because when it comes down to it, you most likely did fulfill your obligation in prayer because you really did need the rain at that point. Okay? Shabbat Shalom.